KALW.
So that, I think, was my greatest fear, was that, you know, if I were to contract it, you know, what would the damage be?
People who were pregnant at the start of the pandemic are just beginning to deliver their babies.
Almost every viral infection you look at, infection in the first trimester is always much more critical.
What are researchers learning about the effect of the coronavirus on pregnancy? Then a San Francisco poet uses flowers as a theme to address some heavy issues.
For me, poetry breaks silence, and I get to use poetry to break stigma, where the personal is political. And that means for me as well, art is political by default.
And a San Jose author's new novel is set in the Kurdish region of Iran.
It is the first novel written in English by a Kurdish woman.
That's coming up. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. While it may feel like ages since the coronavirus first was detected in the U.S., let alone China and Europe, many people who were pregnant and caught the virus during their first trimester still haven't given birth. So one of the many uncertainties about COVID-19 is what can happen to you or your baby if you catch the virus when you're pregnant, and how much can race play a factor. A group of researchers at UC San Francisco are rushing to find answers so they can help newborns and people giving birth in this pandemic and prepare for the next one. KALW's health reporter Angela Johnston has more.
Like many people, back in April, Kristen knew needed something to look forward to. Not only was a pandemic spreading around the world, she just had a miscarriage. So when she and her husband found out they were expecting, they were overjoyed.
Especially after having a loss, you know, just like, oh my God, I hope it works. it was sort of like this really bright spot.
Another silver lining, her husband has actually been able to experience the pregnancy literally by her side, since they're both working from home. But with those silver linings come some big worries.
You know, like one of the first things I remember that I thought of was when Zika virus had an outbreak in South America, babies were born with like small heads, you know, serious birth defects, and, you know, there's a much higher rate of infant mortality.
And then there are the symptoms themselves. Coronavirus attacks your respiratory and cardiovascular system and can cause some serious problems with blood flow, which is really important for a fetus.
So that, I think, was my greatest fear, was that, you know, if I were to contract it, you know, what would the damage be, even if I only had like a moderate case and I was never hospitalized?
So when she asked her doctors these types of questions, they had some answers, but not that many. There's growing evidence that people who get COVID-19 while pregnant may be more likely to have a miscarriage, preterm birth, or need a C-section. And they may be more likely to end up in the ICU. But so far, there's no evidence of birth defects, and most studies have not shown the transfer of the virus to a fetus in the womb or through breast milk. The American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists says there's no reason to delay having a child right now. But because COVID-19 hasn't been around that long, researchers really don't know all the specific ways the virus could affect a pregnancy, especially if someone contracts it during their first trimester. But News Doctor told her she could be part of a nationwide study trying to figure it out. So she signed up. Here's one of the study's leaders, reproductive endocrinologist Dr. Marcel Cedars.
In almost every viral infection you look at, whether it's rubella, Zika, any viral infection, infection in the first trimester is always much, much more critical, which makes sense. That's when the fetal organs are forming.
The hypothesis is that this could be the same for COVID-19. So she's recruiting over 10,000 pregnant people in their first trimesters across the nation and asking them to give blood samples. They'll be able to see if and when they contract COVID-19 and notice other small biological changes. Researchers will continue following the babies until they're 18 months old.
Are there higher rates of preterm birth? Are there higher rates of preeclampsia, high blood pressure with pregnancy? Are there higher rates of fetal growth restriction? And then we're really specifically focusing on neurodevelopmental issues.
Like ADHD or autism. Cedar says what they're paying most attention to is the effect COVID-19 has on the placenta. Even an asymptomatic person's strong immune system could impact the placenta, harming the fetus's development.
I mean, it's a little bit of a scary thought that there may be this sort of silent infection, but I think it's information we need to have, not only for COVID-19, but as this is not the first coronavirus, it won't be the last coronavirus.
Which is why there are a handful of studies at UCSF alone looking at pregnancy and COVID-19. Before the pandemic, epidemiologist Dr. Laura Jalief Pawlowski was looking at how stress could lead to pregnancy or birth complications.
9/11 in New York, we saw a huge spike in preterm births, for example. We've also seen that around the world with tsunamis, et cetera, where these really big, huge punctuated stressors have caused some women to go into delivery, to deliver quite soon after those big events.
It's also been shown that loss of a job or income while pregnant is associated with higher rates of preterm birth, low birth weight, even miscarriage or stillbirth. So when COVID hit, her team wanted to begin collecting data right away. They also plan to enroll 10,000 pregnant people over the next 2 years. Jalief Pawlowski says almost every pregnant person she's heard from so far is reporting much higher levels of stress.
Terrified women who are the lower income women who are having to choose between staying at home and going to work, especially in a customer-facing environments where they might be at higher risk.
Half of the study participants will be low income, and half will also be Black or Latinx, because the team wants to see how COVID-19 is already magnifying existing birth disparities.
We were already having an epidemic of Black mothers and babies and people dying or nearly dying because of pregnancy and childbirth.
Dr. Karen Scott works on the stress study with Jalief Pawlowski. She says the coronavirus has ripped a huge Band-Aid off. Even before the pandemic, Black people were more likely than white people to have a preterm birth and die in childbirth. So over the past few years, Scott has also been developing ways to measure how racism shows up in the care a Black person receives, from pregnancy to labor to postpartum. It's a way to look at their experiences, not just the outcomes of their pregnancies.
So when the pandemic hits, it was, for me, was like, someone's finally going to listen to me, honestly, because everyone's talking about racism. Everyone is talking about differential, like, outcomes, like, why is this one group dying at this rate?
With help from Black women-led organizations, she's making a survey that will gauge how Black pregnant patients were spoken to, if they felt safe, if they were treated with empathy and dignity. It'll ask about experiences of birthing alone, the separation from a child at birth, or whether they were taught how to breastfeed with their own bodies. Eventually, she says, the public can see how different hospitals and insurance plans scored in different areas. And now it'll take into account COVID-19.
Hospitals responded to the pandemic by, you know, these policies that they thought would contain, right, the spread, but they ended up reinforcing these very harmful experiences or policies for the most marginalized, minoritized people, like having nobody at your birth.
Scott says people often share that hospital nurses and physicians aren't welcoming to Black men in birth spaces. This was happening long before COVID was a thing.
My question to hospitals and health plans would be, like, now what? Like, what is your excuse? You can't say you don't know what racism is. You can't say you don't know how to define it. You can't say you can't measure it. I don't know what the excuse is going to be after that.
With Scott's work and with the other pregnancy research happening right now, the goal is to provide solutions alongside the data so that everyone can have healthy pregnancies, regardless of the pandemic and the racial disparities it's laying bare. In San Francisco, I'm Angela Johnston for Cross Currents.
Angela Johnston is KLW's health reporter. You can find more of her stories at klw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Henat Baba. San Francisco poet Thea Matthews ignites the microphone in literary scenes around the Bay Area. She's known to audiences for the rawness of her prose. Thea's debut book, Unearth the Flowers, is a personal collection of poems about survival, challenging oppression, and healing. KALW's Janae Darden caught up with Thea Matthews as she was packing to move for her master's program at NYU.
What made you pick up the pen?
Pain. This insatiable desire to be heard, to be seen. I first started writing poetry as a young adolescent, and it was shortly after the abuse stopped. There was just so much untreated trauma, really, and dysfunction. Familial dysfunction. And so picking up the pen, honestly, was in many ways grace. And so art, for me, has always been a way to lift the burden and share the experience. And also, too, to just somehow know that I'm not alone, that it's been said, and that I can relate to someone and someone can relate to me. And I think what I still hold today is, for me, poetry breaks silence. And I get to use poetry to break stigma, where the personal is political. And that means for me as well, art is political by default. Art is political.
Your poetry, you cover so much as far as when it comes to identity.
Right, yeah. Queer, Black, Indigenous, Mexican poets, you know, I get to pull from these multiple identities. And honestly, it informs my work largely from a spiritual component, where I'm not just talking from one who's been historically oppressed, I also acknowledge the colonizer within as well, you know, where I have Spanish and Portuguese blood in me. Now those people, you know, like original colonizers put Anglo-Saxons to shame in many ways when, you know, in terms of reviewing the course of history. And then also looking at the indigenous side and the African side. And I think it's beautiful. That's why I tend to always refer to myself as a writer who writes on the complexities of humanity, right? Grief and resiliency, you know, depending on the persona of the poem, you know, whether it's going to be much more from a queer lens or focusing more on a Black lens. But definitely I refer to myself too as a Black feminist writer. And so looking at these intersections definitely gives way for what I'm able to explore in my writing. And also having, like, wearing identity as a loose garment, too, right? Like, my soul is not trapped by identity, right?
I want to talk about Unearth the Flowers, your book.
Yes!
And I remember a few years ago when you announced you were writing this book. And I said, when is it coming out, Thea? And you said 2020. And I was like, that's so long. I was like, why is it going to take so long? I was like, you have so much poetry. But, you know, it's with all that's going on right now in our country, it came out right on time. So I was wrong about the release date. But, I read the book and it's really powerful, really moving. Just like all the other work I've heard from you. And Unearth the Flowers, it's concrete meets the soil. And flowers are beautiful and vulnerable and medicine. It's just so many themes in here. Why did you choose this title, Unearth the Flowers? And why did you pick the theme of flowers? Because every piece is named after a flower. It's really I love what you did. It's like your garden.
It is in many ways. Yeah. It's a garden, it's a taxonomical encyclopedia of flowers, right? It's honestly also like a classification of memory. And so why the flowers? It's holding the paradox. And what do I mean by that? Is that flowers, you know, are often seen as these dainty little things, so fragile, easily can be killed, you know, often overlooked, but yet still so deeply admired by their beauty, by their color. And yet they're also just treated as objects and like kind of like dismissed and like used. And yet flowers, as you said, are medicine. flowers precede humanity and are so strong and know how to endure the cycles of land, cycles of life. And so flowers has this multiple meanings where at times I personify, like, I become parts, aspects of the flower. And they're definitely like, crucial to the scenes of memory and experience, because the flowers are these poems, are these stories that are autobiographical by nature and really divulge intense experiences. You know, at times, like children, you know, can be seen as fragile, but yet they are so strong and see so much. And when I say, and in the prelude of my book, the flowers are synonymous with each and every single like image that comes to it, where it's the abuse, it's the trauma, it's the hurt, it's the child, it's the mother, then also to give way to the beauty on the other side. And actually, I think I'll read the poem to kind of give more context. Unearth the abuse, repetition of bruising the spirit, the silence, 2 o'clock in the morning, the mother in silence, the memories of a child, the child, mother, stolen. The generations like weeds ossified, the apathy of those already dead with the pulse, the time said once more, shh, don't tell nobody. The refusal to believe me when I tried to speak, the suffering of seeking vengeance, the vengeance to kill, the rage inflaming my body, the truth on my lips, the screams in the back of my throat, the cries trapped in my teeth, the tongue clipped, now regrown. Unearth the flowers.
Yeah, when I first read that, I said, she came out page one, like, boom, you know. And I remember the first time I heard you read, I felt the pain so much, I actually got up. You stood there strong and solid, you know, and you were like, I'm reclaiming my body, I'm reclaiming myself, like, you don't have control over me. How is it for you to be so open about the abuse that you experienced and survived and reclaiming yourself, especially putting it in a book?
It's part of the stages, I think, of healing and of trauma recovery, where I get to now engage with advocacy and what does it mean to increase survivorship visibility, right? Like, I know I'm not the only one. That is a fact. Like, you want to talk about pandemics, epidemics, sexual violence, child abuse is a pandemic. You know, as much as alcoholism is, as much as racism is, as much as discrimination and homophobia is, you know, we live through so many pandemics already, right? It's just which one is more blatant than the other. And CSA is often a silent killer because you can't see the effects, you know? It's obvious if you see a child with a black eye and a broken arm of like, oh, what happened there, you know? Something, you know, antennas go up. The others can be quite covert and at times asymptotic, where you can't really see the symptoms of it. And so writing this, one, I've done enough work on myself where I felt secure, right? The healing is never done, but I felt secure enough in my journey and ready to write these poems, to release them to the world, to share them, offer them to the world, to remind others of their power. And the beautiful thing about poetry too, right? It kind of goes back to this validation where by me sharing aspects of myself, in turn, gives opportunity for the reader to feel seen and heard as well. Or at least that's my hope, intention.
That was poet Thea Matthews speaking with KELW's Janae Darden. Thea's book is called Unearth the Flowers. We've got a link online at KELW.org.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Bay Area authors have had to cancel launch parties and book tours because of the coronavirus, so KELW is bringing them to you in this series we're calling New Arrivals. Today we hear from San Jose author Ava Homa, reading from her new novel, Daughters of Smoke and Fire. It was published in May.
It's about a sister's fight for freedom and justice for her brother. It's set mainly in the Kurdish region of Iran, and it is the first novel written in English by a Kurdish woman. And here's parts of the prologue. A woman alone on the mountain at dusk. I stood up, my breath now coming in pants. I wasn't hiding anymore. Bessa, Bess, I shouted, it's enough, enough. I started down the hill in a tumbling run and found myself unable to stop. Despite the chill of the evening, I started sweating. The wind whipped my headscarf and I gained speed. I flapped as if I had wings. As I ran, a wail escaped my chest. I was headed toward the main road, toward the world of men. The streets belonged to them, judgmental men, hypocritical men, their honor dependent on women men. Cars hurtled around the curve, full of drunk drivers who honked as they spotted me sprinting down the hillside. They were going too fast for this road, too fast for their sluggish reflexes. I stumbled on a stone, crushing the shiny red poppies in the grass. And as I lurched, my untold story tumbled inside me like pages ripped from a book and tossed, crumpled, into the waste paper bin. Suddenly, I could see the heads of all those Kurds crushed beneath tanks.
That was Ava Homa reading from her new novel, Daughters of Smoke and Fire. Find more information about that and other new novels from around the Bay Area at klw.org/newarrivals. Today's Cross Currents team includes Christopher Agusa, Imran Ali Malik, Troop Wynn, Marissa Ortega Welch, and Babette Thomas. Our engineers are James Rowlands and Gabe Graben. Production manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.